www.thebeatnik.net.
Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Dr. Coben is an author, columnist, financial planner, and international lecturer. He holds a Ph.D. degree in public policy, M.A. degrees in economics and business economics, and is a graduate of Reformed Bible College. Dr. Coben is an outspoken critic of public schools, government regulation, the IRS, paper money, welfare, and abortion. An evangelical Christian and the father of six homeschooled children, Dr. Coben is applauded by listeners across America and around the world as a champion of liberty, limited government, free markets, and peace. Now let's join Dr. Coben with Christian Worldview.
And we welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. This first day of November 2005, glad you've joined us. Another great show on tap for today, and we hope you just sit tight and prepare to think better and deeper. That's what we're all about here at the Christian Worldview Show. Before we do that, let's take a quick look at the weather.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 48 degrees, downtown 49 degrees, Anderson 50 degrees, Clemson 51 degrees. Today, mostly cloudy this morning, then becoming partly cloudy, highs in the lower 70s and west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Steve Califer: "When government offers you something free, run."
Oh, that's right. There's nothing as permanent either as a temporary tax, as Milton Friedman once said. Well, on the main headlines today, there's just the typical stuff going on, like, you know, Iraq car bomb kills at least 20, just more murder, mayhem, destruction, death in that country, thanks to our invasion there, spreading democracy, so to speak. Syria is calling for an emergency Arab League summit after the United Nations passes a stern resolution. We have Detroit saying farewell to Rosa Parks after lying in honor in D.C. Montgomery. Montgomery remains of civil rights pioneer make their way back to her hometown. And we have Senate Republicans and Democrats disagreeing on Judge Samuel Alito's conservative record. Well, it's going to be interesting to follow that and see exactly where he stands on things. We're optimistic right at the moment about Alito, although I'd like to find out a whole lot more. If you know more about Alito, by all means, give us a call here at the show. We'd like to talk about him. 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, 864-201-6955. All those numbers work to get your way in here. Okay, and we also see Alito's nomination may bring a long-anticipated judiciary fight. So they're squabbling about him, which is, you know, that's not bad. We're pleased about that. Bush expected outline strategy to head off bird flu outbreak. Measures could include travel bans, new vaccine ban. Well, you know, the bird flu outbreak. Yeah, as far as I understand, there's only been 60 people who have died from bird flu so far out of 6 billion. It's not that big of an epidemic. So it seems like it's just a useful tool in the hand of George Bush or others to simply make, you know, scare people, maybe bring martial law in. Who knows what he's up to? Doesn't sound good, whatever it is. Anyway, we're not very optimistic about George Bush's doings. Here's a quotation somebody sent me yesterday from libertarian Christians. Have not been able to authenticate the veracity of it or the accuracy of it. Some people actually said that it's really not something that was said by Janet Reno in 1994. I remember her saying something really evil. I just don't remember what it was. She said a lot of things that were evil. But this is apparently under a great deal of dispute. It says the following: a cultist is one who has a strong belief in the Bible and the second coming of Christ, who frequently attends Bible studies, who has a high level of financial giving to a Christian cause, who homeschools their children, who has accumulated survival foods and has a strong belief in the Second Amendment, and who distrusts big government. Any of these may qualify a person as a cultist, but certainly more than one of these would have would cause us to look at this person as a threat and his family as being in a risk situation that qualified for government interference. Supposedly, that's what Attorney General Janet Reno interview on 60 Minutes. That's what she said then on June 26, 1994. And the quote was supposedly reprinted in the May-June issue of Arizona Home Education Journal. I wrote to them and asked them if they had any record of this, because I would like to know that, and I could not find it archived on 60 Minutes online. Do you know, if anybody knows about this quotation, I would like to know about it, because it fits in real nicely with a book I'm doing right now. I would like to make use of that particular kind of quote. So at any rate, do give us a call and let us know what you think about Janet Reno saying that all of us are cultists. Of course, we'd all fit the definition of what I just read. Well, most of us who are listening to the show, at any rate. Homeschoolers, give money to the church, like the Second Amendment, you know, stuff like that. Yeah, it's a shocking thing what the state is, isn't it, sometimes? Unless you theologically know, as we do here, what the nature of the state is, that it's evil, that it's aligned with the Satan, with Satan's kingdom, that its purposes are at odds with God and his purposes. No surprise for us. But anyway, be that as it may, that's the quote. That's the quotation this morning. We'd like to know more about it. If you know more, give us a call. Or let us know what you think of it, at any rate. I'm not going to pick on a straw man. I'm not going to say that's Janet Reno and just start trashing her this morning. I could trash her for a whole lot of things, but I'm not going to trash her for that quote unless I know it's legitimately something she said. And then we're really going to go to town on the old bag. Anyway, is it okay to call people an old bag? I mean, maybe I should be more kind to my enemy. She is an enemy, not a friend. Or maybe I shouldn't. I mean, how kind do we need to be to these kind of people who are this way? Well, the Bible does seem to say that you're supposed to love your enemies and do good to those who despitefully use you. So I guess that would include even Janet Reno. Well, here's a note from the research staff on Jesse Jackson finally being told off. So that came out from grayechoes.com. Received this email from a friend in Baton Rouge this evening. Three cheers for George Sell. Someone finally told off Jesse Jackson. This is from TV9 anchorman George Sell in Baton Rouge. Yesterday, the Reverend Jesse Jackson showed up in Baton Rouge. While there, he said, Bush has not appointed a single black to head up this Katrina relief. The black caucus and black leaders all over America are upset with him for putting the black folks on the side, and it is our people who are sitting on their rooftops waiting for rescue. Our people who are standing in line at the Superdome waiting on food, water, and a ride to a safe black community. Our people who have been locked down in poverty. The anchorman responded to Jesse, Reverend Jackson, the mayors of New Orleans and Baton Rouge are black. The police chiefs in New Orleans and Baton Rouge are black. The heads of Louisiana State Police is black. The head of the Army conducting the Army's operation on the ground in New Orleans is black. The congressman from New Orleans is black. And for the last 40 years, the leaders of Louisiana have been members of the Democratic Party, your party. Don't blame us like you are doing. Look in the mirror. You'll pull the race card any time you don't get your way. We are in a terrible crisis, and right now we need to come together, and here you come to Louisiana and holler racism just like you do. It is never, ever your fault, always somebody else. But here you are, sitting high and dry. Why don't you go out into the waters where they are shooting at the rescue personnel and help in the rescue? Well, good. Somebody finally tells off Jesse Jackson. Good stuff. We like to hear Jesse Jackson get told off. He deserves it. He's earned it. Fox News says Alito's record mixed on abortion raises Democratic concerns. So now we're getting some truth about this guy, huh? Alito's record is mixed on abortion. We'll find out here what Fox News has to say, at any rate. More than two centuries of Protestant domination on the Supreme Court will end if Samuel Alito is confirmed as its next justice. For the first time in the nation's history, five Roman Catholics, a majority, would be on the high court. Yet news of the son of an Italian immigrant father, someone who grew up in a suburban New Jersey parish where he served as a lector and never married, doesn't quite carry the power it might have in the days when the Kennedys ran for the White House. Catholics have become part of the nation's political mainstream, far removed from the blatant anti-Cathabortion and other social issues that will be the focus of Alito's confirmation hearings, making an outpouring of religious pride for the conservative jurist less likely. The Catholic community is not going out dancing in the streets of Boston tonight because of this nomination. says James Davidson, a Purdue University sociologist who researches religion and Supreme Court justices, but it still represents a significant development in American religious history. Protestants have been so dominant on the court that half of the justices have come from at least three denominations, the Episcopal, Presbyterian, and Congregational churches, he said. Only two Protestants would remain on the Supreme Court, David Souter and John Paul Stevens. Well, I guess you can count them as Protestants, liberal Protestants. The other two justices, Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer, are Jewish. Analysts said Alito, as the fifth Catholic, was less controversial religious choice than Harriet Myers, whose adult acceptance of born-again Christianity was discussed for clues about how she would vote on abortion. President Bush helped make a religion a central issue in her failed nomination, saying it was a factor in selecting her for the high court. David Leige, a professor emeritus of the University of Notre Dame and an expert in Catholics and politics, said the only activists likely to seize on Alito's religion are abortion rights groups, who will try to link the judge's position on abortion to Catholic teaching. Most others will focus on his ideology, Leige said. Senators are less concerned whether a person is a Catholic, Protestant, or whether a person is conservative or a liberal. Also, Alito, an appeals court judge, and his wife are members of Our Lady of the Blessed Sacrament Parish in Roseland, New Jersey, a suburban parish which referred inquiries about the judge and archdiocese in Newark. Archdiocese spokesman Jim Goodness said Alito attends Mass weekly and his wife teaches religious education classes at the Blessed Sacrament, where his children were confirmed. But Goodness would not comment on whether Alito volunteers for any church work. Monsignor Thomas Gervasio, the new pastor of Our Lady at the Sorrows, St. Anthony's Parish in Hamilton, New Jersey, where Alito's mother Rose is a member, said she told him the judge was confirmed, served as lector, and was married in Our Lady of Sorrows. The judge attended public school and enrolled in church religious classes as a boy. So he got both the pagan seminary and the true pagan religion, both of them as a young man. Rose Alito told Gervasio, taking calls at her Hamilton home, where a small Virgin Mary statue sat on the mantel, the judge's 90-year-old mother asked Gervasio to say some prayers for Sam and declared of her son, of course, he's against abortion. Two of the Catholics on the current court, Antonin Scalia and Clarence Thomas, are abortion foes. Scalia, whose son Paul is a priest, and Thomas, who's sometimes seen walking together in the court after attending Mass on holy days of obligation. The third Catholic, Anthony Kennedy, voted with the majority in a 5-4 ruling in 1992, reaffirming the Roe versus Wade decision, legalizing abortion despite some apparent inner turmoil. Newly installed Chief Justice John Roberts, the fourth Catholic, is solidly conservative, really? And his wife, Jane, volunteers for Feminists for Life. But it is unclear how he will vote on abortion cases. Over and over during his confirmation hearings, Roberts assured lawmakers his rulings would be guided by his understanding of the facts of the cases, the law, and the Constitution, not by personal views. My faith and religious beliefs do not play a role, Roberts said. The Reverend Thomas Reese, a political scientist and expert of the Catholic Church, said he hoped Alito would not be forced to provide similar public disclaimers about his Catholicism. People have to look at the concrete positions that a man or woman holds, not the religious views that he might have impelled them to take that position, Reese said. Well, there's something interesting to think about for the morning. So we already have four Catholics, four papists on the court. Then we're going to add a fifth one. One of the papists is a liberal who votes in favor of abortion. The other two are our favorites, Scalia and Thomas. Isn't it sad? What a sad state of affairs for America compared to the vision of the founders, where you actually have the best jurors on the court being Catholics, people that aren't even saved people. They're Christian. They're not even Christians, and they're the best things that we've got going. Can you imagine that? Well, this is interesting stuff, and I'm not sure what it means that John Roberts' wife is part of the Feminists Against for Life either. That sounds like, I mean, I know a man can't ultimately control his wife if she's unsubmissive and wants to be a feminist, or maybe it just means that John Roberts doesn't mind feminism. I'm not sure. any rate, we have a caller on the line, so we want to jump to that caller right before the break. We'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with?
Good morning. It's Paul.
Good morning, Paul.
How have you been?
All right. Thanks. Good to hear your voice. Have you been listening to the show this morning? You got some insight for us on something of this Janet Reno quote or something about this new justice?
No, I don't know about the new justice. They throw these people, seems like, out of the blue, although they've been connected for years, and you know, it takes a while to shift through the facts and what, you know, actually going on. It seems like some libertarians think he's maybe one of the best we could come up with, you know, given the political climate.
Mm.
Others do not. I haven't researched it out enough, but anything President Bush does seems to have ulterior motives.
Got to be suspect, you would say.
Got to be suspect, exactly. Like the bird, the avian bird flu. I had read an article, been reading some articles, that evidently this Tamiflu vaccine,
mm-hmm,
was created by this by another country that Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld was chairman of.
Huh.
And he still owes, still owns stock in it, and if they do vaccinate, you know, as millions of people, he may make billions on the deal.
Huh.
You know, it's one of those inside profit.
Well, that's an interesting. Now, hey, Paul, we've got to go to a break. Can you hold for a minute while we're at the break? We're
sure.
Going to talk about it. This is a very interesting comment. You're listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a second.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
A patriot must always be ready to defend his country against his government. Edward Abbey.
The Patriot Network is a national federation of local clubs devoted to bringing relief to the oppressed American taxpayer. It is based right here in the South Carolina Upcountry and chaired by Dr. John Coben's associate, legendary freedom warrior Robert Clarkson. Visit our website at patriotnetwork.info for full contact information, meeting times, and locations around the South and beyond. That's Patriot Network, one word, .info. There you can also sample many action reports, current and past issues of our newsletter, and mainstream news features about IRS rot, corruption, and incompetence. Find out what our decades-old organization may be able to do to put a stop to your IRS problems. PatriotNetwork.info commends Dr. John Coben on the founding of the Tyranny Response Network and his unique Christian worldview show, heard weekday mornings right here on TRN.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, where we comfort the afflicted and afflict the comfortable.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We still have Paul on the line. Paul's been talking to us about something that's very interesting. Effectively, are you still with us, Paul?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. Well, essentially, I think what you're saying is very interesting, that there could be some foul economic motivation, and we wouldn't put this past any politician or anybody in general who can get away with it, I suppose.
That's correct.
Yes. That would say, let's create some kind of a virus for the sole purpose of being able to cure it, or at least, even if not cure it, vaccinate a bunch of people and make, $1 billion or whatever off of the vaccination program.
That's exactly right. The like I was saying, Rumsfeld was made chairman of I believe the Gilead company in 1997, and they hold the rights to distribute a Tamiflu vaccine, and they could make billions off the deal, and even the British Medical Journal, the mainstream journal, says that slim likelihood that the vaccine would be even effective.
Huh.
Against the, so we have to watch out when there's any kind of crisis. It seems like, people in power always try to manipulate more power and profit out of it.
Right. Well, it seems,
at least to me.
Yeah. Well, people years ago used to believe in a romantic vision of government where they would say something like, you know, among the ranks of the filthy and vile and terrible people out there, there are some good people, good-hearted, publicly spirited people, and if the whole majority votes, in fact, if a large voter turnout occurs, then the mind and will of the people will be shown, and we will elect a statesman, and a statesman will behave differently than the self-interested, even greedy people outside, and that person will be able to govern with virtue other people. What we find is this is preposterous. Economists basically exploded that myth starting in the late 1960s and had a big fight with historians and political scientists for 20, 30 years until James Buchanan won the Nobel Prize for discussing this, and became what's known as a theory of public choice, where people are thought to be the same, believe it or not, the same nature, whether or not they're elected and appointed to public office, or whether they're just out running, running in the world of the free market, as you could say, out trying to make a buck without using the political process.
Exactly. Well, if they wanted to do good, they'd be working for charities.
Yeah.
or giving to charities.
There you go.
I mean, the government, shouldn't be involved in charities. Number one, it's just the corrupting nature of government and people who are attracted to government. They're not charitable people. They're in it for themselves. They just like the power of telling other people what to do. And
mm-hmm.
It's Rumsfeld. Those of us who understand the aspartame, how it was passed through FDA in the early 80s. If they understand the Rumsfeld Cheney connection with how aspartame was passed, no surprise in how this new this flu vaccine, how he's going to profit again from it.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say it's not beyond. It shouldn't be beyond our reasonable expectation to think that somebody would use his state power to get money or power for himself and not do something that's in the public interest.
That's it. I just encourage people to investigate. Don't believe us. Investigate it for themselves.
Yeah.
It seems like people are less and less curious.
Yeah. Well, that may be the case. I hope not. But the public school, that is the pagan seminary, does have a way of doing that to people. They end up
pagan cemetery.
Yeah, it's named pagan. That's Bruce Short's word. He coined it, but we like it so much we use it frequently here.
It's a pretty good description right there.
Yeah, that's right.
But all those goblins walking around yesterday,
Yeah, those are the least of our worries. Even
that's
though
true.
Compared to these vile people that are at the public school. And I'll have somebody calling me or listening, outraged. How can you say we're vile people? We're doing good. We're trying to help the kids and blah. Nah, they have no idea how.
No, they don't. That's just amazing. The people in the system, they wouldn't hurt. Well, they may hurt a fly, but they're decent people and they're trying to do good. But they just don't understand the system they're in is doing just the opposite of what they're trying to do. They're not helping people. They're hurting people.
Right. Well, they say they're trying to do good, but then when it comes right down to an edict that comes down that's foul, they say, well, I didn't have any choice but to do that one. You know, I mean, I'm just doing my job. You know, you hear that. I mean, ever since Hitler's men and long before them, you've always had people who are just doing their job. They couldn't help it. You know, sorry, but I was ordered to do this. I can't help it. You know, as if, you know, they're somehow, you know, forced to sin or do something evil because of somebody else. It's just ridiculous thinking.
Exactly.
Well, anyway, appreciate your bringing that up today,
well,
Paul.
I appreciate the great show. You know, keep up the good work.
Okay, Paul. Thanks for the call. We'll
talk
to you soon.
Talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye. Now, we want you to know about your private property protection petition, which is online at tyrannyresponse.com or tyrannyresponse.net. If you go to the Related Media tab, you can find the petition there to protect your private property. If you're if you live in South Carolina, we hope that you'll go and sign it. It takes about 30 seconds of your day. Simply scroll down under the Related Media tab on tyrannyresponse.net, and you'll see there the South Carolina Fundamental Rights petition to save your private property. Sign the petition. It'll only take you 30 seconds, and you'll be glad that you did and contribute just a little bit towards the cause and fight for liberty in our land. It's a tough cause, especially when we have so many people who are opposed to what we're doing. The Tyranny Response Network also needs volunteers. You know, I had a great meeting down in Columbia, and hopefully, I went to the League of the South meeting on the weekend. Met some good folks down there, and we're already talking about very seriously expanding into Columbia. Even before we even have Anderson County fully up and running, we're hoping to get Anderson, Pickens, all that area over there. We're hoping to get Columbia online as well. So we're working on that. It may take a couple months to do. You know how things move slowly here. But if you can help out the Tyranny Response Network, if you want to make our message get out faster to people, if you want to help us proclaim the truth and liberty to the captives of the land, so to speak, please send us an email. Go to the Contact tab on the Tyranny Response Network homepage. Click on the Contact tab and then scroll down a little bit to one of the email addresses there. Send an email to someone. Or you can call Chuck directly. He's willing to take phone calls. Leave him a message if he's not home at 864-271-6761. That's 864-271-6761. And just let him know you're willing to help for an hour or two a month or 3 hours a month on a consistent basis. We have all sorts of needs right now, including a substitute producer of the Christian Worldview show, and some people to help upload new versions of the stream that play throughout the day from the Cato Institute, from American Radio, and many other sources, Dixie Broadcasting. We have a number of people where we get streams, and we need people to help with that project. Doesn't take a long time, but it has to be somebody who consistently do something for an hour every week. So if you have time to help with either of those two projects, we would love to hear from you. Please give us a shout here at the Tyranny Response Network. If you can contribute a little bit to the cause here financially, that's also a great help. Don't think that your $5 or $10 goes unnoticed, or your $100 for that matter. If you go to the TyrannyResponse.com website, again, the front page, as you scroll down, you'll see the address where you can send your check, or I suppose you can mail us cash. We'd take that too. Contribute your help as usual. If you want the show to continue and continue in a great way, please do support the Tyranny Response Network. Okay, well, what else have we got going on today? Well, we've got some interesting things as usual. One of which just came through is the truth about Rosa Parks and the Communist Party. We read about her lying out there in Detroit today after she'd been in D.C., this Rosa Parks, this activist. Here's something that came off of Gray Echoes and was forwarded us by the research staff. Regarding the story of the passing of Rosa Parks, I noticed a few glaring omissions about her life. Although it was a courageous act to refuse to sit in the back of the bus, as she was ordered to do, this was not a spontaneous act on her part. And a closer look at history will tell the full story, which unfortunately does not meet the politically correct criteria for today's news. Rosa Parks was the secretary of the local NAACP in August of 1955, 4 months before the bus incident. Parks attended the Highlander Folk School in Mount Eagle, Tennessee. This school was started in 1932 by Miles Horton and James Dombrowski, both members of the Communist Party. The school's original purpose was to train communist activists on how to promote their textile strikes, hold protest marches, and march and picket. The Textile Workers Union was completely controlled by the Communist Party. Parks attended summer training at the Highlander Folk School in 1955, 1956, and 1957. She is pictured with Martin Luther King sitting in the front row of in a Highlander training class on September 2, 1957, making the story that she was just a poor, tired black seamstress when she sat in the front of the bus is a complete lie. The Old City bus, like the one Parks rode on, is on display at the Rosa Parks Museum in Montgomery, Alabama. Children are regularly brought to the bus on field trips to hear a harsh recorded voice telling all blacks to move to the back. This is deliberately designed to instill feelings of guilt and self-hate in white children. In reality, Rosa Parks, in the civil rights heroine, was a communist agitator and a black racist. That came from a fellow named Ed Toner from the MSN News Group. Well, that's interesting stuff, if that's true. We're very interested to hear about that, especially now because Bill makes just a big deal about her. Okay, anyway, we have some other stories, as usual. Let's see what we come up with. Here is, oh, if you can't beat them, arrange to have them beaten, says George Carlin. That's a good quote. Why don't you read that at the weather? If you can't beat them, arrange to have them beaten. That seems reasonable, huh? I'll forward that one to you. We're gonna get that to our producer here so he can read that if he deems fit. Remember, folks, we have a couple meetings this week. Events tab on tyrannyresponse.com is not updated yet. Rip and Richie will get to it shortly. Tonight there is the Liberty of Plenty meeting in Spartanburg at the world famous Beacon Drive-In at 6:30. And on Saturday, the Carolina Patriots meet at the Prime Sirloin off Woodruff Road here in Greenville, right across from the Greenville Mall. Dinner starts at 12:30, and at 1 o'clock the meeting goes until 3. Hope you can make it to either or both of those meetings. You've been listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this first day of November 2005, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
This is Dr. John Coben. Visit policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net on the web. You'll find there books and articles written by Dr. John Coben, that's me, the Tyranny Response Unit, regarding things related to covenant marriage, allodial land titles, and free market economics. You'll also find there portraits of famous economists, including their biographical information and links to their famous works, as well as many, many quotations for liberty. Visit policyofliberty.net on the web today and find a wealth of information to help advancement of the truth.
I am for doing good to the poor, but I differ in the opinions of the means. I think the best way of doing good to the poor is not making them easy in poverty, but leading them or driving them out of it. Benjamin Franklin.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
You're listening to the Tyranny Response Network, sensible radio that knows that open rebuke is better than love carefully concealed. It's time for your next shock treatment.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, this first day of November 2005. And are you tired of politicians who raise taxes, invade your privacy, and assume that you do not have the sense to make your own decisions? Try voting libertarian for a change. Would you like to meet other libertarians? You'll find they are regular people like you, concerned about the state of our republic and willing to act on that concern. Our business meeting is at 6:30 p.m. the second Thursday of the month at the library on Malden Road between Old Stadium and Lawrence Road. That'll be next Thursday. Visitors are welcome. To talk politics, join us for the Libertarian Underground at 8 p.m. on the fourth Wednesday of the month. It's at Cafe Underground just off of Main Street in downtown Greenville. And in Spartanburg, it's the Liberty Aplenty meeting, and that's held at the world-famous Beacon Drive-In at 6:30 p.m. on the first Tuesday of the month. That's tonight. And we would love to swap ideas with you for restoring limited constitutional government. Thank you for supporting the Libertarian Party and Christian Worldview on the Tyranny Response Network. Now, some of you are still making your way out to work, so we want to check in and see what the weather's going to be like for today.
Right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 49 degrees, downtown 51 degrees, Anderson 50 degrees, and Clemson 53. Today, mostly cloudy this morning, then becoming partly cloudy. Highs in the lower 70s and west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here is a quote by Will Rogers. I don't make jokes, I just watch the government and report the facts.
Okay, yes, we know that one. We've heard that several times, and we like to be reminded of Will Rogers talking about those same things. Well, I tell you what, I've been thinking about the fact that there's going to be a fifth papist on the court, and how some people are trying to return us to a Christian nation, and how even us as the church, we don't seem as concerned about the fact that there is an evangelical on the Supreme Court as much as we have somebody who at least upholds the principles of the founders. And this really is the essence of libertarianism to some extent, is it not? I mean, a lot of us are in the Libertarian Party, even though we claim to be the pro-life faction very strongly, partly due to our Christian faith and partly due to the fact that it's just part of the political philosophy that all people should equally share in fundamental rights and a few other things. But we're willing to let these other people in government, so long as they, you know, uphold our perspective on politics and public policy and so forth, that public policy should be reactive and not proactive only. You know, it really shows that there can be people who are in government and limited government that aren't necessarily saved. Now, this is a huge piece, I think, for people in the Constitution Party that wants to bring us back to a Christian nation. I don't know. I'd like to hear from somebody in the Constitution Party today who can delineate exactly how they feel about this. Are they upset that there's another Catholic that's being put up there? What if this guy's actually pretty good on his understanding of the Constitution, the way he'd interpret it, and so forth? Wouldn't you be happy about it having the Papist on there, even if there's the five Papists out of the nine, and only two we have two liberal Protestants on there and two apparently undeclared. Or no, maybe there were Jews. I think there were two Jews on there. Well, what do you think about that? For me, it just shows that, yes, as far as politics goes, we can stay in places like the Libertarian Party where there are people we definitely do not agree with or unsaved people who are voting for similar principles of liberty. When I'm around Constitution Party meetings, it seems almost like a church meeting, a Bible study, and they look at it as a serious religious event, and maybe that's partly theonomic, I don't know. Maybe it's partly Christian Reconstruction, I don't know. I don't recall Rush Jr. or others ever requiring that the people they vote for be Christians. But it is some interesting food for thought, and I was just noticing how it doesn't really disturb me that this person, Samuel Alito, is a Catholic. As long as he would uphold the Constitution, I'd be happy to have him on there. Some other people might not be so happy, and I'd be happy and interested to hear from them. Probably for the same reasons they couldn't go become a libertarian because there are evil people in the party. Yeah, okay. You know, they're going to be purists and have only pure people in the party like they would find in the Constitution Party. Although even there, they have to admit, like the church, it's full of all sorts of, shady people, maybe, huh? Well, not all sorts. There's a few here and there, right? There's a little bit of leaven that have to say that. I think they would. Not everybody is a pure in all regards in the Constitution Party, I don't think. I may be mistaken about that. It's a small party, so maybe they do have all pure people. But interesting thought. Just let us know what you think. Is that truly a problem, having another Roman Catholic on the court, or having any kind of pagan or papist or unbeliever governing us? As far as, you know, being in state with state power. something to think about. Okay, here's a must-read link that was sent to me from the Tyranny Response Network. It's called 27 Months in Hell, from someone who worked within the Bush administration. Joseph C. Wilson IV was acting ambassador in Baghdad when Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990. He is author of The Politics of Truth, and that's Carroll and Graf, 2004. Mr. Wilson was a diplomat for 23 years and attempted to expose the lies being told justifying our invasion in Iraq. He says, "I'm sickened by this president. I thought I could get no worse than Clinton, but I was proven wrong. We have lost more liberty and freedom under Bush than I could have ever dreamed possible. I'm sickened that this president calls the war in Iraq a war defending our freedom. The only ones I see taking away my freedom are not Iraq's, but my very own government, who have used this war as an excuse to destroy my constitutional rights, create the Department of Homeland Security, whose purpose is to spy upon our own citizens, pass into law the Patriot Act, etc. How anyone continues to support this regime is beyond my own understanding. Are we so dumbed down as a people, so duped by the constant spewing of lies and propaganda from a propaganda system that ostracizes anyone who dares to stand in dissent of our not-so-beloved president, that we will trade away everything our ancestors fought and died for because of supposed safety and security? Was it not Benjamin Franklin who said, those who sacrifice liberty for security deserve neither? Was it not William Penn who said that those that will not be ruled by God will be ruled by tyrants? Being ruled by tyrants is a precise curse of a nation that has turned its back upon Almighty God. This is not a war for freedom. It is a war for conquest, a war that has made this nation a much more dangerous place to live, especially considering the fact that we have a president who keeps our southern borders wide open for any and all terrorists to just walk right in. So go right on, you blind supporters of the Republican Party. Yours is a party politics, not principle. You have sacrificed liberty on the altar of party loyalty, Republican Party loyalty, loyalty to the party above, loyalty to God Almighty. You're nothing more than sheep being led to the slaughter by a president that has traded away your constitutional rights, your jobs, your manufacturing base, who has put us over $8 trillion in debt, who has destroyed our economy. Well, that's going a little far there, but anyway, who has provided record funding for our abortionaries, yet claims to be a Christian. If he is a Christian, where is his fruit? Any Christian that voted for this man should either hide their heads in shame, or should hide their heads in shame. Our Congress shares just as much of the blame. It's past time for a good house cleaning. Well, isn't that something that somebody who worked within the Bush administration, Joseph C. Wilson IV, and who just wrote something called 27 Months in Hell. Isn't that something interesting? Somebody right inside the Bush administration is saying, telling the truth about it. We appreciate that, and that's good work, research staff, for finding that. We always like to read that sort of thing when we see it. Here's some more about from directly from this guy's article. After the two-year smear campaign orchestrated by senior officials by the Bush House, White House against my wife and me, he says, it is tempting to feel vindicated by Friday's indictment of the vice president's chief of staff, I. Lewis Scooter Libby. Between us, Valerie and I have served in the United States for nearly 43 years. I was President George H.W. Bush's acting ambassador to Iraq in the run-up to the Persian Gulf War, and I served as ambassador of two African nations for him and President Clinton. Valerie worked undercover for the CIA in several overseas assignments and in areas related to terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. But on July 14, 2003, our lives were irrevocably changed. That is the day columnist Robert Novak identified Valerie as an operative, divulging a secret that had been known only to me, her parents, and her brother. Valerie told me later that it was like being hit in the stomach. 20 years of service had gone down the drain. She immediately started jotting down a checklist of things she needed to do to limit the damage to people she knew and to projects she was working on. She wondered how her friends would feel when they learned that what they had thought when they knew was a lie about her was a lie. It was a cheap payback by the administration for an article I had written contradicting an assertion that President Bush made in his 2003 State of the Union address. Payback is not just to punish me, but to intimidate other critics as well. Why did I write the article? Because I believe that citizens in a democracy are responsible for what government does and says in their name. I knew that the statement in Bush's speech that Iraq had attempted to purchase significant quantities of uranium in Africa was not true. I knew it was false from my own investigative trip to Africa at the request of the CIA and from two other similar intelligence reports, and I knew the White House knew it. Going public was what was required to make them come clean. The day after I shared my conclusions in a New York Times opinion piece, the White House finally acknowledged that the new and now infamous 16 words did not rise to the level of inclusion in the State of the Union address. That would have been the end, but instead the President's men, allegedly including Libby and at least one other known only as Official A, were determined to defame and discredit Valerie and me. They used eager allies in Congress and the conservative media, beginning with Novak. Perhaps the most egregious of the attacks was New York GOP Representative Peter King's odious suggestion that Valerie got what she deserved. Valerie was innocent in this whole affair. Although there were suggestions that she was behind the decision to send me to Niger, the CIA told Newsday just a week after the Novak article appeared that she did not recommend her husband to undertake the Niger assignment. The CIA repeated the same statement to every reporter thereafter. The grand jury has now concluded that at least one of the president's men committed crimes. We are heartened that our system of justice is working and appreciative of the work done by our fellow citizens who had devoted 2 years of their lives to the grand jury duty. The attacks on Valerie and me were upsetting, disruptive, and vicious. They amounted to character assassination. Senior administration officials used the power of the White House to make our lives hell for the last 27 months. But more important, they did it as a part of a clear effort to cover up the lies and disinformation used to justify the invasion of Iraq. That is the ultimate crime. The war in Iraq has claimed more than 17,000 dead and wounded American soldiers, many times more Iraq casualties, and close to $200 billion in damage or in tax money. It has left our international reputation in tatters and our military broken. It has weakened the United States, increased hatred of us, and made terrorist attacks against our interests more likely in the future. It has been, as General William Odom suggested, the greatest strategic blunder in the history of our country. We anticipate no mea culpa from the President for what his senior aides have done to us, but he owes the nation an explanation and an apology. Joseph C. Wilson IV was acting ambassador in Baghdad when Iraq invaded Kuwait in 1990. He is the author of The Politics of Truth, Carolyn Graf, 2004. He was a diplomat for 23 years. The insider coming out telling the truth about George W. Bush. And you are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904. 864-244-8177 or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Sick of having the dead flies of bad public policy stink up the ointment of American liberty? The follies and foibles of the political sages of our day are plucked out daily on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben, weekday mornings from 7:30 to 9 o'clock, right here on 97.7 FM in Greenville.
This is Dr. John Coben from Christian Worldview. You know, a lot of my listeners call and ask me about allodial land titles, covenant marriage, and other topics of importance to Christians who love liberty. Many of these things I've written about at the policyofliberty.net bookstore called Alertness Books. We invite you to visit the Alertness Books bookstore today and pick up the materials that will help you learn the truth and be free.
The inherent vice of capitalism is the unequal sharing of the blessings. The inherent blessing of socialism is the equal sharing of misery. Winston Churchill.
Hi, this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
You're listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network. It's roughage for your brain.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you joined us today. We're talking about some pretty deep and heavy stuff, to say the least, today about just about a number of issues with George W. Bush, the war in Iraq, the avian flu with Caller Paul, as well as some stuff about the Catholicity. I can use that, that he's a papist, this guy Samuel Alito, and how, if that bothers us or not. So be happy to hear from you as well. If you have something you want to talk about regarding these issues over the air, 864-244-8177. That's 864-244-8177. Or our main line, 864-244-9904. That's 864-244-9904. That one works the best. So use that line if at all possible. Here's some more works that came up from the Tyranny Response Network staff, the researchers. Christian girls beheaded in grisly Indonesian attack. This is actually a couple days ago now. I didn't get a chance to report it earlier. Three teenage girls were beheaded, and a fourth was seriously wounded in a savage attack on Saturday by unidentified assailants in the Indonesian province of Central Sulawesi. The girls were among a group of students from a private Christian high school who were ambushed while walking through a cocoa plantation in Poso Kota subdistrict on their way to class. Police Major Ricky Naldo said the area is close to the provincial capital of Poso, about 1,000 kilometers northeast of Jakarta. Well, this is a tragedy. What an awful thing to hear that Christians are being attacked like that. And we're not surprised, because Satan hates the light. He hates the Christians, and he is going to do what he can to assail them. And may the Lord be pleased to bless their families at this time and encourage them that those girls, if they be Christians, are indeed in the hands of their Savior this morning, and that they can continue on their faith, knowing that whatever befalls them, whether the Lord slay you or not, he still is glorified and he will win the battle. But it's tragic to hear that sort of thing happening. Okay, upstart Anglican newspaper is banned in Brandon. Oh, here was something interesting, I guess. A new Anglican publication aimed at offering a more conservative alternative to official church newspapers. Hold on a minute here. Losing our place on our email, excuse us. Official church newspaper is spurning controversy and has been banned by a Manitoba bishop. Bishop Jim Nidgovan of the Diocese of Brandon said the upstart Anglican Planet is sowing the seeds of distrust and disdain within the church, and that the publishers have no respect for those in authority over them. He has banned the monthly newspaper, which launched in May, and his parishes as bishops. I do not endorse any such material, nor do I wish to see it distributed to our parishes. So somebody being a little too conservative, I'm not sure what that means when you're an Anglican anymore. Up in Canada, and they're just telling him to knock it off, get rid of it. Can't have this kind of thing. There is an Orthodox movement, it says in the article, within the church. We don't know that there is a true Orthodox movement, but might be something. We know there are Reformed Episcopalians. Harris said the group wanted to present more conservative viewpoints on topics such as same-sex marriage, but they don't want them to be heard, no doubt. So, okay. Here's something else. Friday, October 28th, this actually came out. 65-cent solution takes on the educational establishment by Kevin Peterson, the Stateline ORG staff writer. A fledgling national advocacy group aims to force school districts nationwide to boost spending in the classroom, not by raising taxes, but by cutting back on administrative and support services such as busing and counseling. The goal of the little-known group, First Class Education, is to change the laws in all 50 states by 2008 to require schools to spend at least 65% of their operating budget on classroom expenses, including teacher salaries, computers, and all after-school activities. Well, that's interesting. It would force them to reduce their inherent pork, huh? It's been circulated among Republican lawmakers in several states. that lists political benefits by putting the 65% proposal on the ballot. So interesting stuff. We, of course, what we'd like them to do is spend zero. That's right. I mean, it sounds so radical to some people, but we are against the pagan seminary. We're not in for gradual reform. We don't want to have little marginal changes that will affecting in the long run. We want it gone tomorrow. Bring the bulldozers on. Stop the property tax bills from coming. There is no need to have a public school, a government indoctrination center, a pagan seminary. We need to get rid of the thing. Dump it. Vamos. Let's go. Get rid of it. That's radical, I know, but that's what we need. And that's what we need to promote, not these halfway solutions that sort of get us nowhere. How much has your gradualism really done? How much has being nice and pussyfooting around the issue and trying to take one little step gotten you in the last 30 years, last 40 years, even the last 10 years? Have you gained more ground for liberty with that approach, Christian? I'm telling you, if you think you have, you've got your head in the sand. We are losing ground fast because of gradualism, because people are brought up and indoctrinated in the idea that they can go step by step and take a little bit back here and here and make little incremental changes. Doesn't work, folks. We are less free today. We have less support for our values in this country than we ever have and had in the past. And it's going downhill fast. That's the facts. Wake up and smell the coffee. Off the Bus by Paul Gottfried. A commentary in a commentary this week from Jonah Goldberg, whom I did not mean to pick on, then again for moving out of his depth, addresses the history of American conservatism from the 19th century by focusing on two developments, the founding of the National Review in 1955 and the role of William F. Buckley, Jr., in steering that magazine and the movement associated with it toward the public acceptance. Such reflections seem timely in view of two recent events, the 50th anniversary of the National Review's establishment and the celebration of the 80th birthday of its founder, who in recent weeks has been acknowledged by the liberal church triumphant for having grown and over the years for having reformed his movement accordingly. He says, going down a little further, after talking about Edmund Burke and after talking about whether or not what he thinks about this is correct, the closest thing Goldberg comes to an explanation about what has befallen to the American right, quite broadly understood, is when he mentions the intellectual ruthlessness shown by the founder. Because Buckley has never lost sight of the ideal fixed on the compass, he has been throwing friends and allies off the bus from time to time. That is allegedly the way his movement has been able to deal with the kooks like Murray Rothbard, John T. Flynn, Ayn Rand, M.E. Bradford, and me. Beating up me and expelling dissenters has been a necessary exercise, lest conservatives lose sight of Buckley's highest political ideal, which, are you ready for this, is nothing else but fusionism. Buckley has been roughhousing dissenters on the right for the last 50 years because, according to Goldberg, he's been zealously pursuing a fusionist ideal that only students of the post-war conservative movement would even be wary had existed, and which operated mostly on yellowed pages of the back issues of National Review. Presumably, this fusionism provides a key for Buckley's alliances and enmities, which have sometimes looked at others like socially motivated opportunism. Thus, Buckley intervened with the President Reagan in 1981 against the appointment of Buckley's longtime friend Bradford to the National Endowment for the Humanities in favor of a neocon candidate, Bill Bennett, whom Larry Vance has named the Bookie of Virtue. That's great, the Bookie of Virtue, an incident positively recounted by Mark Gerson as a result of the fusionist compass that Buckley was holding. Unlike the Communist Party, this bit of improvising called the conservative movement did not have a serious intellectual tradition or worldview to which it was bound. And to the dinosaur Republican Party, by now, conservative foundations and publications have to carry out a double responsibility, cheering for the Republican Party or vilifying their Democratic rivals for government patronage, while genuflecting before neoconservative icons who have all the freshness of Egyptian mummies. Mr. Buckley has gone through life making socially acceptable friends. As for others, he has thrown every one of them off the bus. And that's Paul Gottfried making that critique of Buckley. And the other people he mentions in here being thrown off the bus, like M.E. Bradford, a true champion of the South and of our values here, as well as good men like John Flynn, who exposed FDR's craft a true conservative, and did a great job, you know, in his book As We Go Marching, showing that Franklin Roosevelt was really a fascist. Of course, we all know about Rothbard and Ayn Rand and the free market positions they took. So they all got tossed by Buckley because Buckley had a neocon agenda that was paramount over everything. Well, speaking of conflicting worldviews, which Buckley does not have our worldview, that's for sure, any neocon, the Worldviews Project has announces the publication of Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism. It's $20.99 plus $2.50 shipping and handling, and you can obtain a copy it's written by Dr. Stephen Yates, by sending your order, your check made payable to the Worldviews Project, and send your orders to the Worldviews Project, care of Dr. Yates, at 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216. That's 3500 Pelham Road, Suite 216 in Greenville, South Carolina, 29615. If you want a copy of Worldviews, Christian Theism versus Modern Materialism, send your check off today. If you're a member of the Libertarian or Constitution parties, you get a $2 discount, so make sure you let them know if you are a member of either of those parties, and they'll get a copy right out to you. Hope you'll support Dr. Yates and his efforts and read this great book. Okay, you are listening to Christian Worldview with John Coben. That's Dr. John Coben, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
The Bill of Rights, the first 10 amendments of the American Constitution. Amendment 1. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion, or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedoms of speech, or of the press, or of the right of the people peaceably to assemble, and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. Amendment 2. A well-regulated militia, being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms, shall not be infringed. Amendment 3. No soldier shall, in time of peace, be quartered in any house without the consent of the owner, nor in time of war, but in a manner to be prescribed by law. Amendment 4. The right of the people to be secure in their persons, houses, papers, and effects against unreasonable searches and seizures shall not be violated, and no warrants shall issue, but upon probable cause, supported by oath or affirmation, and particularly describing the place to be searched and the persons or things to be seized. Amendment 5. No person shall be held to answer for a capital or otherwise infamous crime unless on presentment or indictment of a grand jury, except in cases arising in the land or naval forces, or in the militia, when in actual service in time of war or public danger, nor shall any person be subject to the same offense to be twice put in jeopardy of life or limb, nor shall be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. Amendment 6. In all criminal prosecutions, the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial by an impartial jury of the state and district wherein the crime shall have been committed, which district shall have been previously ascertained by law, and to be informed of the nature and cause of the accusation, to be confronted with the witnesses against him, to have compulsory process for obtaining witnesses in his favor, and to have the assistance of counsel for his defense. Amendment 7. In suits at common law, where the value in controversy shall exceed $20, the right of trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise re-examined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. Amendment 8. Excessive bail shall not be required, nor excessive fines imposed, nor cruel and unusual punishments inflicted. Amendment 9. The enumeration in the Constitution of certain rights shall not be construed to deny or disparage others retained by the people. Amendment 10, the powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively, or to the people.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Liberalism is not to be tossed lightly aside, but to be hurled with great force.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben this first day of November 2005. Glad you've joined us. Good show today. Lots of interesting information going around. And we're the station that helps you think better, think deeper, think differently than the mass of humanity calling themselves Christians or Americans who are out there doing what they do and following the Pied Piper off of the cliff. Before we go on with more stories and informative information for you this morning, let's check out the weather.
Okay, right now in Greenville, Spartanburg, it's 49 degrees, downtown 51 degrees, Anderson 50 degrees, Clemson 53. Today, mostly cloudy this morning, then becoming partly cloudy. Highs in the lower 70s and west winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. And here's a quote by Will Rogers again. The difference between death and taxes is death doesn't get worse every time Congress meets.
Okay. Bush administration pushing domestic surveillance envelope. This is by Pastor Chuck Baldwin in his NewsWithViews.com article. He says, secret wiretaps, seized bank records, uncensored physical searches, secret computer tracking, ever enter the ever-growing government world of domestic spying. The recent Washington Post report, Monday, October 24, 2005, stated the FBI has conducted clandestine surveillance on some U.S. residents for as long as 18 months at a time without proper paperwork or oversight, according to previously classified documents to be released today. Records turned over as part of Freedom Information Act lawsuit to indicate that the FBI has investigated hundreds of potential violations related to its use of secret surveillance operations. The report also said FBI agents obtained emails after a warrant expired, seized bank records without proper authority, and conducted an improper, unconsented physical search, according to the documents. Although heavily censored, the documents provide a rare glimpse into the world of domestic spying, which governed by secret court and overseen by a presidential board that does not publicize its deliberations. The records are also emerging as the House and Senate battle over whether to put new restrictions on the controversial USA Patriot Act, which made it easier for the government to conduct secret searches and surveillance, but has come under attack from civil liberties groups. The Post report quotes David Sobel, general counsel for the Electronic Privacy Information Center, as saying, we're seeing what might be the tip of the iceberg as the FBI and across the intelligence community. It indicates that the existing mechanisms do not appear adequate to prevent abuses or to ensure the public that abuses are identified and treated seriously and remedied. This writer has previously attempted to warn his readers regarding the way this administration seems obsessed with trampling America's basic liberties under the rubric of national security. Americans should be very concerned with any administration, Republican or Democrat, is willing to disregard or even suspend the Constitution and Bill of Rights for any reason, and that's exactly what the Bush administration seems determined to do. However, the Bush administration does not seem content to routinely abuse our right to privacy. It has also publicly called for the suspension of posse comitatus and for the U.S. military to take charge of domestic emergencies. That's what the Washington Times said in their article, Bush Seeks to Federalize Emergencies, September 27, 2005. I believe it is urgent that the American people, especially people calling themselves conservatives, become cognizant of the many attempts by the Bush administration to eviscerate the constitutional protections of our liberties. We must not allow this or any administration to undo this remarkable experiment in liberty. It is incumbent upon all Americans to remember that any government that is unwilling to conduct itself according to the enumerated principles contained within the Declaration of Independence, the Bill of Rights, and the U.S. Constitution is a rogue government deserving neither our submission nor support. Ooh, did you hear that? He's a pastor telling you don't need to submit to the government. I love it. Gotta love the Constitution Party when they say stuff like that. Yes, there is a time. You don't have to submit to the state, folks. And Chuck, you heard it from Chuck Baldwin. Pastor Chuck has even said so himself. He says, I urge my readers to listen to my radio interview with former Georgia Congressman Bob Barr, and that gives you a link to do that. At this very moment, House and Senate confesses we are meeting to resolve differences with which each chamber's version of the just-passed Patriot Act, the Senate version, is preferable to that of the House. The truth is, as the House version is nightmarish, it contains almost no safeguards against further government abuse of power. Okay. Well, that's a great article, and we appreciate Chuck Baldwin talking about our national security as he does, and does such a great job in lambasting Bush as he needs to be lambasted. Of course, we frequently do that here. I believe we have a caller on the line, and we're going to try to jump to the phone lines here and take our call. Okay, we'd like to welcome you to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with? Do we have someone on the line here? Hello?
Hello.
Yes, sir. You're on the line. Welcome to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Who am I speaking with? They're having trouble hearing us, apparently. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Well, who am I speaking with?
Hold up. I'm from Charlie Communications, sir.
Okay. We don't have a caller on the line. We have somebody trying to call us. Just a moment, please. We'll go back to our regular broadcasting here. Somehow, the producer let one through there, folks. Sorry about that. All right, let's go back here to talk about some of the news stories that are going on. Teachers dying from beating. Teachers dying from beating. WAFF 48 News has learned the teacher who was brutally beaten at a Valley school has died. Oh. The attack happened Wednesday inside the Lawrence County Family Education Building in Moulton. Doctors say that Judy Jester's condition worsened as she never regained consciousness. She died Sunday afternoon at a Huntsville hospital. Jester was a first grade teacher at Hatton Elementary School. She was found bleeding and unconscious inside the Lawrence County Family Education Building in Moulton Wednesday night. Investigators say that she had been beaten several times in the head and face. Jester suffered a fractured skull and a brain stroke. A 15-year-old is accused of attacking her. The unidentified teenager is being held at a detention center in Lauderdale County. Police believe robbery may have been the motive behind the beating. The teenager faces robbery, battery, burglary, and attempted murder charges, but now those charges are expected to be upgraded. The teenager could be charged as an adult. WAFF News will continue to follow this story and will bring you new details as we get them. So in Alabama, somebody's beat. It sounds like in Alabama, at least. Somebody's beat to death, a teacher at a public school. Don't we, these pagan seminaries, when you teach pagan values, when you have a pagan seminary, and when you have government indoctrination, are we surprised when we hear this kind of violence going on? No, we're not surprised. This should probably happen more frequently. We're surprised that it doesn't happen more frequently when you have kids being taught the thing that they are, as they are being taught, beating someone to death, a 15-year-old beating some teacher to death. By hitting her in the head, this Judy Jester, what a tragedy. On the other hand, what can you say? What can you expect out of a government indoctrination center? I mean, really, are we that surprised? I'm not. I'm appalled by it, but I'm not surprised by it. It's an awful thing that it happens. All right, here's something else off of LouRockwell.com. This was sent up to us by the LibertarianChristians.org manager Brian Morton. How Much is a Million? A very important book review. This is by Linda Schrock Taylor. Don't let the size of this book suggest that its 36 pages should be discounted and marginalized. It's a very impressive and very important book for children at all ages of maturity, ages 2 to 102 years of age. Not only is this book well written with David M. Schwartz, using clear and uncluttered prose to explain mathematical concepts so expansive that they might better be thought of as labels for the abstract rather than complete concrete concepts. Not only is this book well illustrated by Stephen Kellogg in the style typical of his wonderful work in books such as The Day Jimmy's Boa Ate the Wash Paul Bunyan, Pecos Bill, and Johnny Appleseed. Not only is this book the product of the courageous publisher, Scholastic Incorporated, willing as it is to risk its reputation in order to educate the people, not only is this book made more relevant by the clever use of meaningful examples of unambiguous drawings, but this book, when read carefully and duly pondered, serves as a vaccination of sorts against the insidious, numbing, brainwashing methods currently being practiced by the state. In these days of inflated prices, most notably the cost of war, the cost of welfare, the cost of bringing contracts home for bosom buddies, it is the state's hope that by wildly flinging large numbers about, the citizenry will be confused to point that people will stop trying to visualize exactly how much money has been and continues to be stolen from their pockets and spent on projects totally objectionable to most taxpayers. Thanks to this marvelous little book, the game is over. The secrets are out. Thanks to this marvelous little book, the means now exist to comprehend the extent to which the state is financially shackling the present and future of every present and future American. How much is a million Swartz please that clears up the confusion? If 1 million kids climbed into another's shoulders, they would be farther up than airplanes can fly. If you wanted to count from 1 to 1 million, it would take you about 23 days. How big is a billion? If 1 billion kids made a human tower, it would stand up past the moon. If you sat down to count from 1 to 1 billion, you would be counting for 95 years. How tremendous is a trillion? If a trillion kids stood on top of each other, they would reach way, way beyond the moon, beyond Mars and Jupiter too, and almost as far as Saturn's rings. If you wanted to count from 1 to 1 trillion, it would take you almost 200,000 years. 200,000 years to count to 1 trillion. Yet the state throws such terms around as if they were meaningless, and as if Americans should just nod vaguely and say by rote, "Whatever you say, Uncle Sam, just spend away. It's only money. We'll pretend that it's meaningless to us so that you and your bosom buddies can gain real benefits from our family's real losses." Picture this. If you put 1 trillion goldfish in a goldfish bowl, the bowl would have to be as big as a city harbor. I would like to picture this. Every politician being required by law to sit down and actually count the amount they propose to spend. Yes, the larger the debt they want to approve, the longer it would take them to count take them out of the commission while they would count for 95 to 200,000 years. Even having to sit around, sit and count for 23 days would cause them to reconsider spending money they don't have, and thus putting all Americans deeply into debt. Yes, this book, How Much Is a Million, clears up confusion, puts government spending into perspective, and suggests an innovative method for limiting congressional spending. One tax dollars, two tax dollars, three tax dollars, four tax... If Congress is forced to count our tax money before they spend it, they will never have enough to support bad habits like wars. Bring the troops home while we wait and wait and wait. Oh, what a money saver. Meanwhile, check the federal debt clock and note the rate at which the state is spending your money. I think the debt clock is over $8 trillion now, if I'm not mistaken. Just appalling what's going on with the state, as usual. You are listening to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We're going to jump to our final break, and we'll be back in just a minute.
If you have a question or comment for the show, please dial 864-244-9904, 864-244-8177, or 864-201-6955. Calls are received 7:30 a.m. to 9 o'clock a.m. weekday mornings. If you are listening at any other time, you are listening to a recording. You may also email your questions or comments to questions@policyofliberty.net.
Hello, this is Dr. John Coben. Get a copy of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective, my latest book. You can buy it online from Alertness Books. The link is at the top of policyofliberty.net. That's www.policyofliberty.net. It's only $11, and it will help you think about the Christian's relationship to public policy and the nature of the state. Be sure to get a copy today of Bible and Government, Public Policy from a Christian Perspective.
You are listening to TRN, the Tyranny Response Network, 97.7 FM in Greenville, 87.9 FM in Spartanburg and Liberty, and 96.5 FM in Piedmont.
Hi,
this is Dr. John Coben. Is it okay for a Christian to become wealthy? Did you know that 8 out of 10 Americans will face retirement with little or no savings, even Americans who had good incomes? At Integrity Group, we are dedicated to providing personalized service, finding effective ways to protect and increase your hard-earned money. Integrity Group is an independent financial planning firm that offers a wide range of services. We specialize in finding creative, custom solutions to meet the needs of each individual. Do you have concerns about providing for your retirement? Do you want to ensure that catastrophes like disability or long-term care will not wipe out your savings? Do you need to have your assets protected from creditors? Do you want tax-advantaged growth of your savings? At Integrity Group, we recognize that time passes all too quickly. Sound financial planning is not something to be delayed. Our offices are located at 514 Pettigrew Street in downtown Greenville. Make an appointment with Integrity Group today at 864-244-6464. That's 864-244-6464.
That we are here to stand by the president, right or wrong, is not only unpatriotic and servile, but is morally treasonable to the American public. Theodore Roosevelt.
Warning: Dr. Coben's show is not recommended for anyone with an aversion to deep thinking and critical analysis.
And we welcome you back to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We want to also remind you that the Times Examiner is the independent conservative voice of the Palmetto State. Are you tired of reading liberal columnists? The Times Examiner features outstanding conservative and pro-life libertarian columnists. And the Times Examiner supports home and Christian schooling, limited government, free markets, private property rights, gun ownership, Christian values, and our great Southern heritage. You can pick up a copy of the Times Examiner at newsstands around Greenville, South Carolina, or at their offices located at 44 Pine Knoll Drive. A full year subscription to the Times Examiner is only $25 in-state and $27 out-of-state. You can get a subscription by calling 864-268-0576. That's 864-268-0576. To place an ad in the Times Examiner, by all means, give a call to David at 864-859-6817. Ask for him specifically by name or leave a message if you can't get a hold of him. 864-859-6817. You'll be glad you did. You'll help your business and help a great paper succeed here in the upstate. And I always appreciate page 10 because that's where they put me every week. And glad for all your encouraging comments and supports of the Tyranny Response Network, Unit's column there. And I do get many, many people who enjoy reading my column, and I appreciate your interest and frequent consideration and thinking deeply. Because really, folks, I know, as many of you are starting to realize, that unless people start thinking a little more deeply, we can have no way of possibly regaining our liberty here in this land. All right, well, what else have we got going on today? We've got a couple more stories, probably worth reading out here, and we're going to do our best to bring them to you in present form. It costs nothing to be a patriot. That's what this article says, forwarded to us by Reb. Paul Joseph Watson, October 31st, 2005, says, "The amount of credible state terror whistleblowers reflects an unbelievable enlightenment progress since 9/11. In the beginning," this is Mark Twain speaking here, "in the beginning of a change, the patriot is a scarce man, and brave, and hated and scorned. When his cause succeeds, the timid join him, for then it costs nothing to be a patriot. The past year has witnessed a groundswell of support for controversial truths from credible individuals across the political spectrum. We tread on fertile ground, and the climate has never been more welcoming of what would otherwise be considered difficult realities. In the face of despair, born of a world of constant swirling turmoil, we need to regularly remind ourselves of the fact that many hands make light work, and slowly but surely we are gaining momentum and having increased indelible effect. As the internet becomes our first source of news and political blogs, and the alternative news websites are being called the new talk radio, so it follows that high-profile political figures are more and more fearless to embrace popular trends and thinking and putting their reputations on the line in the name of truth and liberty. In the immediate aftermath of September 11th, criticism of the government was tantamount to treason. Over 4 years on, and it's almost cliched, a cliched fashion trend. Rather than jumping on the cultural bandwagon, however, many individuals have simply hardened their stance on the core issue that dominates all others: state-engineered terror and false flag operations. In April 2002, Cynthia McKinney became a pariah after she questioned the official story of 9/11 was run out of office for doing so. 3.5 years on, and there are still dozens of Cynthia McKinney's. The state and its media establishment mouthpieces cannot make bad examples out of all of them because their numbers are too great. In a target-rich environment, focused on demonization campaigns are worthless. Former German Defense and Technology Minister Andreas von Bülow was among the first to point the finger of blame directly at the highest levels of the U.S. intelligence establishment for complicity in 9/11. Von Bülow stated that 9/11 was the first stage of a covert operation carried out to brainwash Americans to supporting a war on the Muslim world and eventually a conflict with China. In September 2003, former Blair Environment Minister Michael Meacher called the war on terrorism bogus in a London Guardian piece and attacked the 9/11 NORAD non-response as inconceivable. In subsequent articles, Meacher again raised government protection of terrorists and questioned why the so-called mastermind of the 7/7 London bombings was an M16 asset. Former chief economist for the Department of Labor during President George W. Bush's first term, Morgan Reynolds, caused waves when he released a detailed analysis of the highly suspicious collapse of Building 7 that came to the same conclusion as this website, that's Infowars.com, I guess, when stating that there was no other reasonable explanation that the building was brought down by carefully placed explosives. High-profile member of Parliament George Galloway, who is again under attack even after proving he was framed by means of U.S. forged documents against him, warned of the very real danger of the U.S. government staging a terror attack. Galloway made this statement in June of this year and encouraged the public to be wary of false pretext or a planned invasion of Iran. At any rate, there's a lot here to read. I'm going to stop there because we got the general point here. This is a very fascinating sort of thing to read to me because it makes sense that state leaders would cause a catastrophe in order to further its own interests and its empire building, its own self-interested greed or whatever other motivations, carnal motivations you might imagine. Didn't Nero do the same thing? Do you folks know that Emperor Nero was the reigning despot, the tyrant who ruled Rome when the apostles Paul and Peter were writing to Christians in that city, or the Christians that were banished from that city? Did you know that Nero purposely, of his own accord, set fire to Rome and burned two-thirds or maybe even as much as three-quarters of the city by his own intentional action, and then did it for his own pleasure, carnal delight, and glory, and then blamed it on who? Christians. So if somebody's going to sit there and tell us that state rulers are unwilling to do these kinds of terror attacks, I'm just going to point him to Nero. He did it. Why would we expect that it would be any different today? Did the blood of Adam and Eve not flow through George Bush's veins or Donald Rumsfeld's or Dick Cheney's or Bill Clinton's? I don't think so. That is the same evil stuff that goes in each one of those people's veins as flowed through the veins of Nero or any other tyrant in the history of the world. So let's wake up here, folks. It could be, it's conceivable that state actors, government agents, could indeed attack others. They could indeed attack people and do terrorist plots here, domestic terrorism, in order to further their own cause, whether it's political power, whether it's military dictatorship, whatever it might be. It's possible, it's plausible, and we need to wake up and smell the coffee once again on that, folks. So I appreciate Reb sending up that article to help us think a little bit differently than we normally would. Because it certainly seems that it could well be an inside job. I have no reason to believe it's not. Anyway, here's one other article we'll try to close our show with today. We've got two. I don't think we'll get through both of them. Daily article on Mises Economics blog: is the Fed an inflation fighter or a creator? They're both related to this, both these last articles. Every few days, a senior Fed official expresses concern regarding an effect of high gasoline prices on inflation. These comments are always phrased in a way that a meteorologist would report the weather, as if the phenomenon in question is an act of nature. Even stranger, these statements imply that only the Fed can hope to save us from this natural disaster. To invoke another metaphor, this is like the cook who bakes a poison pie and then arrives on the scene of grave sickness, claiming to be the medic with the antidote. It is the Fed that creates, not cures, inflation. The surest way to stop is to stop the printing presses, something that a government with massive debt and the desire to sustain a boom is not likely to do. The Fed's latest warnings began on September 5th, 2005, when the retail price of gasoline climbed to $3.06 a gallon, an increase of 72% from the earlier January earlier in the year. They believe that the decisive factor of setting an inflationary spiral is people's inflationary expectations. This causes workers to press for higher wages. Businesses try to recoup these wages and by pushing the prices of goods and services higher, thus ignites inflation, or so it is believed. That's cost push inflation, which isn't true. But anyway, on October 19, 2005, the president of the Dallas Federal Reserve, Richard Fisher, said in a luncheon in Houston, "I will not waver from advocating policy that discourages expectations of higher core inflation. The object will always be to keep inflation at bay so that American business machine can keep on humming. It is inflationary expectations, so they believe that keep inflation going. Once inflation is triggered, also once expectations are set in motion, it's actually not. It's actually not what causes it. The Fed causes it simply by increasing the money supply. That is the truth of the matter, and that was the point of the Mises Economics blog. And there have been other people have been writing about this recently. I had another email come from Arnie Cohn, who runs the Patriot Network group up in Knoxville, off of rents.com, and he's saying, look, you just read the facts about the Federal Reserve System and you're going to find out that the Federal Reserve System is really behind all the evil going on in the money supply world and the inflation world. It's the Fed which is the main culprit. In fact, rents.com has something called a phone call to the Fed from Dan Benham, and it's sort of a funny way to understand what's really going on, I guess. The following is a conversation, he says, with Mr. Ron Sapinski of the Public Information Department of the San Francisco Federal Reserve Bank. This is the count of that conversation. And he goes on and talks about the caller talking about what actually is involved with printing these particular Federal Reserve notes and how the Federal Reserve causes inflation problems and other disastrous problems in our economy. No, the state's not going to get rid of it. That's how they make their money, folks, from the Federal Reserve. Besides the government school, that is the pagan seminary, there's nothing, no more evil institution in America than the Federal Reserve. And you heard that right here. Take it to the bank. You heard it right here on the Tyranny Response Network. And you have been listening this morning to Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Glad you did, and we look forward to having you back again tomorrow for another edition of Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. Until then, God bless you.
Thank you for joining us today on Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben. We hope you will be with us tomorrow morning at 7:30 right here at the Tyranny Response Network for Christian Worldview with Dr. John Coben.